Hey everybody, this is John Robinson from Someone's Story. I'm excited to present this episode with my friend Karen Lennox. Karen and I go way back. We used to work together, and now we're kind of off doing separate things. But right now, what she's doing is she has a background in gerontology, and she also works in the sector of, you know, life insurance and helping get people's, you know, affairs in order when it comes to their end of life questions and decisions. So, grief is a topic that grief is something that we all experience at some point in our lives, as well as loss. So I thought that it would be a good discussion to have, and that a lot of people could relate to. I'm excited to present this conversation with my friend Karen, and I hope you enjoy it. Loud. Okay. Awesome. All right. I am here with Karen Lennox, my good friend Karen Lennox, and I'm really excited to be here with her because we recorded for season 4, actually, and this is one of the lost, what I call the lost recordings that I wasn't able to release, unfortunately, because of the tech issues I had, but I'm really excited to be back with her, discussing with her again. And Karen, how are you today?
I am doing well.
Awesome. And Karen is on here because she wants to discuss the importance of getting your affairs in order and getting your business straight in the middle of a pandemic.
Actually, your affairs should be straight prior to them, as much as you can afford to straighten them out. Mm-hmm. And it's better to leave specific directions for people. The more directions you leave in the beginning, the less problem you'll have in the long run.
Okay, fantastic. Could you elaborate on why that's important?
Because if you don't get everything straightened out, it causes complications at the end. I'll use my own personal example. My current companion, I'll leave it there.
Okay.
His mother died of COVID maybe like 2 weeks ago. And it's been less complicated for him because his name was on everything. However, it takes like maybe 45 days for the banks to release your accounts again. And then on top of that, if you don't have money in a separate account to pay the bills, then that's problematic.
Right.
You have to align the policy collection with the intent to pay the bills at the same time. Because when I spoke with him last night, he was very distressed about that. I can't pay the bills. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, you know, I said, I tried to tell you. And then he has to also sell her home too, which causes extra added stress. So you may have the stress of having a leased car, which it's there. And you may also have the stress of needing to sell the home, which means you have to go through orphans court and probate court. And that can get to be pretty hectic because you can't just sell somebody's house. Not unless your name is on there too, which is a different matter.
Right, right. Things can get really complicated when you haven't worked these things out beforehand, when you haven't even discuss these things beforehand. These things are important to have discussions about, and those discussions can get very uncomfortable at times. And a lot of people wait and wait and wait and put these discussions off until it's really kind of knocking at their door.
And it's a problem. Thank goodness that my father didn't do that to us. He actually delegated people, which helped me in the long run. So I didn't have as much worry, but then I heard from my companion, well, you know, your father had much more money than my mother. That's not the point. You don't need a lot of money to get your affairs in order. If you have a designated will that's been notarized by an attorney and has gone to, I keep wanting to say orphans court, but that the registrar of wills, then you can alleviate a lot of stuff. In Delaware, that may be a little bit less difficult than it is in Pennsylvania, especially in Philadelphia County. That can get tricky and time consuming because it takes a lot of time to like get somebody's death in order, because once they close their eyes and you throw dirt over them, that's not the end of that. It's just not.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And could you discuss the reason, like, because I know that, you know, I mean, it's one thing to write these things down, and it's another thing to actually go through the legal process of getting these things notarized. Could you discuss the importance of going through that process as well?
It's better to get a lawyer set forth a will that you decide along with that attorney that it's unbreakable. That's number one. I feel like my will is unbreakable because I set forth specific instructions. First of all, I made sure that because of my situation and everything that I've been through, that it couldn't be viewed as undue influence. Do you know what I mean? That means
could you elaborate? I'm somewhat familiar with that term, but for my listeners, could you elaborate on that a little bit?
It means either you were having sex with the person to influence them, feeding them drugs or alcohol to influence them, which isn't the case, you know. And so to prevent that probe, it's good to sit down with the attorney and explain the relationship of the person that you're with, so there's no misinterpretation of that.
Gotcha. Okay. So that, so making sure that you're not taking advantage of them, essentially, and that the attorney knows that you're not taking advantage of them, because there are certainly circumstances where people do those things because they want to get in someone's will. They want to get it like a piece of the pie, to use a very, you know, apt term, I guess, in a way.
Well, yeah. In real time, I've been accused of that once before. And I told everybody, I said, I didn't do anything. You know me, John, if I did something, I'll tell you I did that. Or, and if I didn't do it, I'll tell you. No.
Right.
How it was. So these people essentially don't believe me. Oh, yes, she used undue influence. You know, and I was so sick at the time, I was unable to, like, do any of that. And so the point being that it caused the long drawn out thing, it's probably in the law book somewhere, although my lawyer said I looked for it but I couldn't find it. I'm like, yes, I'm glad you didn't find it. It was probably would have been Lennox versus the state of Delaware. Do you know what I mean? And in the end, his relatives wound up trying to steal money that was supposed to be mine. It gets very complicated. And
we're talking about the person who accused you, just to be clear.
The family accused me.
Gotcha. Okay. And just for purposes of confidentiality, we don't have to get into names and stuff like that. But that's basically a lot of the work that you're doing right now is inspired by personal experiences, it sounds like.
Yes, it is. And with my companion, when he said, well, they closed the bank accounts down and he was stressed out, I kept repeating the one loop line that we always say during our script. That's exactly why I called. It's like, what does that mean? That's exactly why I called, means that I'm calling because you need help. You applied for this help. Although a lot of people say that they don't remember, we get cursed out, people hang up. I mean, that's just par for the course.
Gotcha.
And then I have somebody that wants to cancel an existing policy because he's upset with the company because they want to check his background. Well, I told them everything I know. I said, it doesn't matter. I said, for your age, you're not going to find another $68 policy that has living benefits that are going to protect you if you get sick and you can't work. I said, you work in a dangerous place. So if there's some kind of explosion there and something happens to you when you're sick, sure, you'll get whatever workman's comp, but what are you going to do when that's over with? You know, because that's only a certain percentage of your salary. So that's exactly why I called you. And I mean, I just kept on repeating that. So people don't get sometimes that you're going to need help eventually, as we all are. And unfortunately, to some degree, I'm uninsurable because of a lot of the things that have happened to me. So I'd wind up paying a very high rate. But then I have enough funds that it'll be okay for me to, like, kind of float down for a while. And also, too, I have what I consider to be an ironclad will.
Okay.
It's very clear. The best thing you could do is start with the will. Don't do LegalZoom. Go to an actual attorney. Set that forth. And then it would be smart to get an insurance policy to cover the mortgage for a specific amount. So if your house payment is $1,500 a month, this is a good market for selling houses, but I would multiply 1500 by 12, which would give you a year's worth of payments. Let me see. Let me just do that real quick here.
Okay.
1500 times 12. That would be an $18,000 policy.
Oh, okay.
So that's going to be less expensive. So you could keep the lights on at the house. You don't have to worry about it. You could pay the mortgage. You have some time. you know, if everything else isn't sky high or expensive, that should take you through at least 6 months, you know.
Gotcha.
You do it by 90 days, 60 days, 45 days, whatever the client needs. Sometimes they only need maybe the 1 month. Oh, my house would sell like hotcakes, but you don't know what somebody else is going to come in and find behind moving out.
Because there's never, if I've learned anything from, because my parents are, you know, and they're not realtors, but they've definitely, you know, that's definitely something, the real estate market is something they've explored throughout their lives. And one thing that I can say, just watching them explore that market, is that there's never really a lot of guarantees. There's a lot of unpredictability there, even when the market seems predictable.
That's true. And it's even worse now.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, that's what drives, you know, when it's a good, there's a lot of variables, but like until you sign. And one thing they told me about, because I've never bought a house before, I've only rented places, but one thing they
sign on the dotted line, nothing's in stone.
Exactly. And that's what they've told me, not just about that, but to how to treat almost everything. And that doesn't mean that I haven't failed to do that. Sometimes I've counted my chickens before they hatch with things, but exactly. So that's a good way of looking at it. I think that the other thing that makes things difficult is, you know, I think a lot of people take for granted, you know, how long they think they're going to live. You know, like a lot of people take it for granted their life expectancy. And in addition to that, they take for granted their health to some extent, you know.
I had a 30-year-old, 33-year-old, 32. And I'm talking to this young man. I said, well, hey, you know, this is the policy I have. Have you ever had cancer? Oh, yes, I had leukemia. I said, well, how long ago was that? 10 years. I said, well, you would be a good candidate because you're young and you've recovered.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, I'm not going to die anytime soon. It's like, dude, you had it when you were 15. What's wrong with you? I'm going to live forever. Well, this isn't fame. It's not.
Right.
You know, like, come on now. But I mean, people are like that.
Right. One of the things that's been interesting about, and this is slightly off topic, but one of the things that's been interesting about doing this podcasting is that I've realized that these recordings will outlive me, most likely, which is very strange, like with the internet and all this stuff. But that's been a weird thing to think about. And it's almost made me think about my own mortality to some extent in a weird way. And I'm going to be 30 on March 15th. And so like, yeah,
you're ready for spin the dentures.
So yeah, me thinking about that, like the fact that I think about that is strange, you know, to some extent, because it's like, really, like, but yeah, it's something.
No, you should think about that, because what happens, it's not fair to leave the burden of burying you on your parents. Not that they can't afford that, but why mm-hmm. should, why, you know what I mean?
Right.
My dad took care of us having a burial plot. Do you know what I'm saying? So anybody whose last name is Lennox could go there, which is essentially mm-hmm. my brother and myself. And I've been being bugged. Hey, get the lock number where you could go. I'm like, you're going to have to wait on that. I mean, I know it's there. So, you know, you have to leave everything in good order so that somebody knows what to do with everything when something happens to you. I would say maybe I'm about 75% of the way there.
Okay.
Excuse me. Probably the most problematic thing would be my home. I would suggest leaving it to one person. That's it for me. Well, you know my situation. Everything's ironclad. You can't come along and say, well, how come you didn't leave me? I wrote it down that you don't get anything. So the person knows, don't even have a funeral. Just burn me up. Just burn me up. You weren't nice to me in life, and that's okay. You don't have to be, but don't come flooding the funeral home when everything else is like all said and done. So yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing, is that everyone, there's not really a universal approach to this, I wouldn't imagine, is there? I think it's very individualized to some extent.
Universal in terms of
Everyone's approach to how to handle their affairs, not only I would imagine would be different, but should be different, I would think.
Well, yeah, based on what your assets are and everything that's going on, because I know with my companion, he had his name on everything of his mother's. So he can essentially go in and shut down her accounts because he has all the passwords and everything. Mm-hmm. He was like, I cut off the phone. I did this. I did that. You know what I mean? So the better prepared the person who's handling things is, the less stress on them. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's been like, this has been an extremely stressful situation.
Sure.
She was 86. It's almost as bad as when my dad passed away. I think you were around for that, weren't you?
I was around, I think, for the almost immediate aftermath of that. You know, you were definitely, yeah, like you were definitely, yeah. When we first started, because we used to work directly together. And when we first started working together, I think it had just happened. And you were taking some time to yourself for that.
I had to go and sit down in a corner for the next 90 days. He was like, right. I can't afford to do that. You know, and so he's faced with automating the business to mm-hmm. make up for her slack, right. catching up the books because she must not have been feeling good for a long time before that. Because I visited the home a few weeks ago, I had requested, well, can I please come take pictures before you get ready to sell the house? And the answer was yes. So when I looked around, people don't realize that they need to check on their parents or, right. you know, relatives, because you could tell if somebody's feeling all right by the way their house looks. Mm-hmm. The house was like, there were yeah. things all over the place, you know? So I just looked around, I thought, and there was a pair of shoes left exactly as they had been probably when he had mm-hmm. to take her to the hospital, because nobody expects anything. I mean, coronavirus is something. She right. went in, she was walking and talking. The next thing you knew, the doctor said, well, I want to put in a stent. And I'm listening to all this in my professional opinion saying, it might be okay, but I don't know about that so much. The doctor wanted to put in a stent and give her blood thinners, but then her breathing began to deteriorate because they were giving her Remdesivir. So like that doesn't, you know, you need to know the effects of drugs, but they had talked mm-hmm. about her final wishes as they were rolling her in. And that became right. difficult because, she said whatever my son said, but all of that was set forth. All he had to do was go to the bank, get it out of the safety deposit box, essentially, and bring it back to the hospital when they determined that she wasn't going to survive it. You right. know, he's like, I don't know what to do. Maybe I'll do it today. I said, do it today. So you don't have to rush around and get and have every beat all wonky when right. you're not able to function. That's not what I really wanted to say, but I know children might be listening.
Right. Yeah. No,
so,
no.
You can say
what you want on here, but if you want to censor yourself, you can do that too.
Well, I'm going to, but I mean, it's a very sensitive subject. Right. No, because I pointed out everything that I wanted. And when he realized that that was probably the last time that he was going to be in here for a while, he asked me, he said, what do you want? Do you want to be cremated? And I said, yes. And then he asked me, I need the passwords for the next time. But that's like a whole nother story. Well, you know,
sure. Yeah.
My friends absolutely. Have questions about that. What are you giving him passwords for? Because I am, you know, I've watched him, you know, so.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And going through some of this again, you know, one of the things that I think that you definitely mentioned that I can certainly relate to is, you know, the idea of you can tell how someone's feeling or how someone's doing by their living space. That is very true of myself because, you know, even at my age, because over this summer when things were going great for me.
Old.
Yeah. Well, I think that's not even necessarily an old person thing. Like that's like a, over this summer when things were going much like pretty well for me, you know, or I won't say well, but when things were a little more stable for me, you know, my living space looked, I mean, I'm always a little disorganized, but my living space looked, yeah, you know, my living space looked pretty good. But like over these last few months, when things have been a little more turbulent, it's definitely not looked as good. And I'll just leave it there. But But
well, I struggle with that too because of my brain injury, but you know, I get help like once a month. I have people that come in, and depending on how I'm feeling when they leave is how it might look the next week. So I know that I'm having company this weekend, so I can't really afford to leave everything like all like disheveled.
Sure, yeah, that's a good motivator. Know,
well, yeah, kind of. It is kind of. Because of the profession, you know, it's like, what if the refrigerator, you know, it's like, why are you checking my refrigerator? But I make sure everything's cleared out. Well, people leave dishes in the sink, then they wonder why they have a problem. Well,
yeah, that's a little different.
I'll get a paper plate in the heart because I live here by myself. And if anybody comes over to dinner, we're eating on paper plates because I'm not washing anything.
Right. Well, one thing that I try, I think there's an important distinction between mess and filth, because filth is, because like filth will, filth is when you start to get into, like, you can get condemned for filth. Mess, it's just like, it's clutter, you know?
Yeah, you could straighten that out in like maybe an hour or less. I have more, I guess, clutter than filth, but I've been looking around lately thinking, well, maybe, well, I need to do something about this clutter because, like,
with
the place I'm in, you know, I have to clean everything up. And if somebody's going to come to my house, they're not going to be inspired to do business with me if everything's
exactly
like, wow. And the cleaning lady straight up lied and said, you know, you're very organized. I'm like, you're lying to me.
Yeah.
You know, because I had more papers around because I had been in that frame of mind knowing that anticipating a death in a family, I was like super uncomfortable with that. So
I'm organized when I make it a priority, and I'm able to make it a priority when things are, it's much easier to make that a priority when things are more stable than when things are turbulent. One thing that I think you brought up though, that was also a great point, is that, that popped into my head, was the idea that I think that, and I think I've mentioned this on this podcast before, is I think as a society, we've gotten fairly decent at handling grief, but not at handling death. And with your background in gerontology, I'd love for you to speak on that.
Okay, so since we kind of knew the death was coming at the beginning of the month, the thing that I've done, and it's easier when you know somebody versus when you don't. The things that I've done is like, I've sent emails, you know, you were a good son, you know, stop feeling bad because you think you can't be there. We're in a pandemic. They may let you in, they may not. And I got, well, you always know what to say, Anna. Are you doing the Jedi mind control thing? And it's just like, no, that's what I do for a living. That's my wheelhouse. I said, so you can kind of tell how somebody's feeling. And when you know them, it's easier to like appeal to that place where you don't want them to feel grief, but it's going to come in waves. One day you may be okay, the next 3 days you may not be okay.
Right. It's
very different depending on what you have to deal with at the time. And so you said people deal with grief but not death.
I think that as a society, we're a little better, at least in our society, we're a little better at handling grief than we are at handling death. If that makes sense. Or at least I heard that mentioned by actually a comedian whose mother was a hospice nurse. And I thought it was such an interesting way of thinking of things. And I thought that you, since with your background in gerontology, it would be really interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
You know, people, I don't know. I have to think about my mom when I talk about that, because she talks about how many people in a neighborhood have died. Well, so-and-so died. I'm thinking, I don't know them, so it's just like, how can I put it to you? I wouldn't say that it doesn't mean anything to me, but I can't, I don't relate well to that, because
I'm
a person. You know, grief and death, I don't think you could separate the two. That goes hand in hand.
Okay.
Because it's permanent. So, you know, you've had that. When my dad died, I had to go sit down in a corner somewhere for 3 months. Because I couldn't talk. I mean, I literally like lost my voice. I had to step back and take a look at everything that had happened and try to process had I had any role in it. And I finally came to the conclusion that I didn't. I went to grief counseling for a while with some other people. from the Abington Memorial Hospital.
Sure.
While I was off, I had a chance to attend the sessions. You know, and people talked about how they fought within their family, how there were unresolved issues, how, you know, what are we going to do with the stuff? Death, I guess, maybe is wrapping up the loose ends. Grief gotcha. Is the process where you feel the loss. And okay. It's harder to wrap up the loose ends because what was the conversation on the phone last night? It's expensive to die. I said, well, that's what I've been trying to tell you.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. And one of the things that, and when you said that, oh my goodness, I just lost my train of thought. But I think one of the things that you said, where you said that it's hard to separate the two, or you mentioned that it's, I just lost my train of thought, but something you said about the idea that it's hard to
separate them because grief is what you feel when the person is gone and death is tying up the loose ends.
That was it. That was it. Okay, so when you said that death is tying up the loose ends, what exactly did you mean by that?
You have to go and you have to buy a casket. You have to have a funeral. You have to go to orphans court, the registrar of wills. You have to shut down all the credit cards. You have to turn a leased car back in. You may or may not sell the home. You have to get property assessments on any properties that are left and see what those are worth. There's just 100 million things. You have to clean out the house because my offer was, well, let me help you start to clean out the house.
Sure.
And it was like, I'm not ready to do that yet. And my teacher in school said, sometimes it takes a really long time. Everybody's different. She said, there was this woman and her name was Susan and her husband dropped dead one day. She said, hey, my name is Susan Jones. My husband died and I'm ready to volunteer. It's like, whoa.
That's a lot of energy for someone.
Some people, maybe she didn't like them. Who knows? You just don't know about that. And then she said, some people take a long time, you know, before they come out of their shell and recover because death is like a trauma. It's a trauma to the person. So it depends on how they died and what happened. And so the answer that I got about, because right before he went in to see his mother, one of my girlfriends had waited and she worked in hospice, but I said, I don't know how to put that. And so what I said was, he said, I don't know if I could go in and see her. I said, you know what? I said, your mother had courage. What do you mean? I said, she had courage to push you out. You need to have courage to go in the room and say goodbye to her.
Wow. That's interesting.
No, that's just how it is. Well, you know, I'm pretty straight up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it probably wasn't the nicest thing that I could have said. As somebody that had a great parent, you know, that was like, you need to look like going in there. You know, buck up, go in there and like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no, I kind of get what you're saying though, because I have, without saying too much here, who are in my life who, and this kind of goes with what I was saying about the, you know, at least my perspective on the difference between handling death and handling grief is that there are people in my life who seem to be able to, who seem to be open to the grieving process, but when it comes to things like going to funerals or going to memorial services or going to, you know, like, or, you know, going to visit people who are, you know, who are either really sick or, you know, might be kind of on death's door, who even people who they've been really close to or who they say they care about or whatever, they have, sometimes they just can't do it or they avoid it or they'll come up with some excuse not to, it seems
like. A lot of times people come up with excuses because my mom said, when my grandmother passed away, she felt guilty because she didn't stay. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I knew she was going to die, but I didn't stay. And I actually, I was working as an aide for Home Instead, and I had the occasion to sit with the cousin of a famous congressman. I said, are you related to him? He was like, yeah. And then the family turned around and walked out, and that let me know that there was bad blood. So the night before, He was telling me, he said, I'm so sorry. I'm like, what are you sorry about? And what I got from that, because he died the next day, he said, I'm a coward. I said, why would you say you're a coward? And what he was saying to me essentially is that I'm afraid to die.
Because aren't we all to some extent?
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. It depends on what you're prepared for in terms of your life. Some people are prepared. I had a good friend of mine from the VA said, if I had to close my eyes tomorrow, I had a good life. Not everybody's afraid of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably less afraid of it than a lot of people are, but I still have some level of fear, I think, of death. I think I have what I would guess would be a healthy fear of death. Like, I don't think I'm mortally afraid of it. Like, if people are going to be worried about me once I say this, I'm going to get I'll say it because I'm ready for it. But just I've lived a life in 3 decades that a lot of people, I think, where I've accomplished and done a lot of things, you know, that a lot of people would dream of. I've met a lot of people who would, I think, kill to have the life that I've had in 3 decades over way more decades that who have lived a lot longer than I have. So if I don't know if I'd be okay with it if I dropped dead tomorrow, you know, knock on wood, but but like it would, I'd be like, well, I guess it could have been worse, you know, like it could have been like I could have had a worse life, you know, it even though it was kind of short. You know, I definitely think I'd be a little bummed out about it.
You wouldn't know the war was over to be bummed out about it.
Yeah, and that's true. You know,
my only request would be like, I wouldn't want to linger. Because yes, when I attempted to tell my mom about that, and she said something, I said, well, no, I don't think she lingered any, because the deterioration was maybe like over a couple weeks, which isn't a super long time to hang on or hang in there.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I wouldn't want to linger, you know? But yeah, I think that when it comes to that, like that thing where it says like the idea of, you know, being afraid of facing it, there's being afraid of facing it like for yourself. And then there's being afraid of facing it for people that are close to you, because it's like,
that's true too. There's a differentiation there for sure. Because, that's true. Because the thing that I said was, well, you know, I got an A in death, dying, and bereavement. And then the next answer, oh, so you're a hotshot, huh? I'm like, no. Like, why do we have to be a jerk here? You know, we're being a jerk, sir. That's just my specialty and my wheelhouse. So, like, I kind of sort of know how somebody's doing, how they're not doing, what they might be experiencing. Mm-hmm. Because our teacher was good about that. You know, letting us know. I can't even remember what the name of the textbook was. I probably have it downstairs somewhere.
If I didn't go
to school. But I mean, you know, so you just kind of learn those things. And we were sitting there in a hospital waiting room afterward. And I said, you know, they call that double effect terminal sedation. And I think it just flew overhead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, they're going to sedate her tomorrow. And that's the same thing that happened to Joan Rivers, because I was talking about that to someone else. And I said, you know, because I was telling my mom, because my mother said something about that. I said, let me tell you something. When people do that to somebody else, because I don't know how we got on the topic of Joan Rivers. I think I was telling my mom that I had been reading Katie Couric's book, Being There. And Katie talks about how she fell out with Joan Rivers and she never saw her again because she died, but she had been nice to her. When her husband Jay died, after Edgar died in Philadelphia. You're kind of young. You don't know anything about that, John.
I know who the people are. I don't know about the drama though.
Yeah. So then, like, I told my mom, she said, well, she's been dead for a while now and her daughter sued. I said, well, you know why she sued? Because when you get to be like about 70, maybe, you are not supposed to do a medical procedure on a person of that age, because she had a heart problem. She mentioned that years before on the Johnny Carson show. saying, well, I have a heart problem, but I'm fine. You know, if you know that somebody has a problem like that, you don't do anesthesia in an office.
It's like what happened to Michael Jackson.
Well, yeah, you take them to the hospital because, well, he really wasn't that old. I mean, that was years of addiction for him. But somebody that's of a certain age, you don't do that in an office setting because it's risky. It's high risk and you should know better. I said, you know, she should get every penny she can. I said, because, you know, essentially that's called double effect terminal sedation. Mm-hmm. I said, that was one of the first things we had to read. And I never forgot reading it because it's a legal procedure. It's like they're saying euthanasia, but they don't want to come out and say, well, you know, we're going to give them enough sedation. And if you make it through the next day, then you just made it through. But if you don't make it through, then that's the end of the story. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, you know, has been kind of on my mind is the idea that, you know, there, I mean, like I said, I have to be careful how I phrase this, but I know people who they, when they lose someone close to them and they didn't go like either see them in the hospital or they didn't go to their memorial or their funeral, they'll like come up with these mental gymnastics about why they didn't do it. And it's like, I would have so much more respect for it if they just said that they struggle with facing death, you know, like that would be easier for me to accept than if they, than these mental gymnastics that they come, that they
everybody's come up with. Not that good though. Cause I have a good friend that I went to high school with, and later we were stationed in the Navy together, unbeknownst to us, till I saw him in the park in California one day. He said, you know, my brother, cause he lives in Japan. He said, my brother lived in Georgia. I said, aren't you going to come and see mom? He's like, well, I can't make it. And so he says,
right, like that,
he remembers being really furious because, you know, it wasn't that he didn't want to go. His wife didn't want to go. You know what I mean? And so he said he came to the funeral and he was crying and the rest of the family told him, you better leave him alone. He said it took everything he could not to just like knock him out. Essentially, I'm going to leave it there.
Right. Yeah. And like, I don't think that necessarily those, I don't like, and like, cause then you come off like, and I don't think that those people are necessarily bad people, but they come off like they're callous because of these mental gymnastics they give. But if they just said, hey, I have problems with, you know, facing death, or I have problems with doing this because of the things I've been, that would be so much easier to understand if they just were vulnerable like that, than if they came up with the, if they just, I don't know. It's a weird reaction to me that I think there should be maybe there is research on it that I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, because I explained to my companion, I said, you know, your grief is simple because everybody loved each other and they got along. I said, I had complicated grief, which is why I had to sit down for 3 months, turn inward and think like what happened. You know, and then we were still dealing with the family dynamics. And then on top of that, my uncle asked the lawyer, well, where's a copy of the will? All he had to do was ask me and I would have emailed him.
Right.
And he told him it's down at the county courthouse. I'm like, oh, Lord.
And grief is often complicated. Like, I think that we all think that there needs to be this universal I mean, we have that saying in our society that everyone grieves differently, but then there's often like this scoff that like a lot of people scoff at that, but it really is true to some extent. And it's like, we're comfortable with that idea with ourselves, but we're not comfortable with it with other people a lot of the time. And I think that the reason a lot of times we're not comfortable with it with other people is because other people aren't vulnerable about why they grieve the way they grieve, you know. And I wonder if we need to have a broader conversation about that. I don't know.
Probably, but the bottom line is that you should get your business straight, because exactly. I had a friend of me who I went to go see her parents, and this was their answer to me. And I don't know if her mom is still living or not. She said, you know something, she said, we gave everything out. Now we told everybody to come pick out whatever you want because we don't want any fighting at the end.
Okay.
You know, so everybody's different, you know, everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, I think we've had a great conversation here, Karen.
Yes. The bottom line is get your business straight. If you're young, like John Robinson, then you need an insurance policy, while I could still cover you and it'll be a nominal fee.
Right. And where can
people find you, Karen? Where can they find information about you? Where can they find, if there's any links that I can put in the show notes, what would be some good information for that?
They could probably reach me at my email, klenoxandshores@gmail.com. And then we can set up a meeting from there if they really feel like they need help.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for coming on. It's great talking to you as always. And yeah, have a great day.
Okie dokie, you too.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Are you okay?
Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And we recorded that back towards the end of February. I've since turned 30 years old, and it really is just interesting. I've been thinking about my life a lot, and I'm grateful for, everything I have, and but it does get you thinking about things in terms of just your own like going forward and stuff like that. So I thought this was an interesting conversation. Grief and loss have certainly been a part of my life and for pretty much my entire adult life. On and off. And so I think this was a productive discussion, and I was glad to have it with Karen, and I thank her for coming on the show. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to our next episode. I apologize for getting this episode, I apologize to Karen and to my audience for getting this episode released later than expected, but I'm going to try to get back on schedule here. All right, thank you guys.